columns and videos delivered to your inbox every morning. Register for the free Denver Sports Daily at 1043thefan.com.
Go to 1043thefan.com and subscribe to The Fan Daily for the latest columns, blogs, news, videos, and more sent directly to your inbox every weekday morning.
All right, so I have a couple things to pass along. One,
can we be there?
Robert Griffin III, the quarterback, tweeted just a couple minutes ago, sources say there will be no preseason this year.
Huh.
I wasn't expecting Robert Griffin to go all, you know, Woj. I didn't know. I was like,
sources.
He says, sources say there will be no preseason this year.
Okay.
Wait, what?
Wow.
Oh, my gosh.
That's what Brandon McManus kind of told us.
Yep.
A week or so ago, he said, Adam Schefter said it had been cut from 4 to 2 games, and he said, I think it's either going to be 0 or 1.
Yeah.
So, I guess it's not really that surprising, but coming from Robert Griffin, that's a little bit, didn't expect him to break
the
news.
Sources say there will be no preseason this year. I didn't see that one coming. It's like Kanye announcing his candidacy for president. I just didn't see that one coming.
Yeah.
Although it was just last week, I was looking around at 2020 and saying, man, you know who needs to come bail us out? Kanye.
Yes.
All right.
one of those shoes, Yeezys.
Yeezys.
Yeah.
All right. There could be a decision tomorrow. In fact, there will be a decision tomorrow that'll be made by some really smart people that could directly affect your sports viewership this fall, starting at the back end of August. And that is a vote within the Ivy League athletic directors that will vote on pushing their college football season to the spring. Everyone is watching this in the college sporting world. All right. In the last 24 hours, I have done some digging myself and then just reading articles that, and I'll take this one. I'll take this one from CBS. It said, a time is running out for the 2020 college football season to start on time, which is leading many to wonder whether the entire season will ultimately be moved a few months to the spring of 2021. The first indicator of that possibility is expected to come this Wednesday from the Ivy League after the conference stated its plans to announce its final decision regarding fall sports and college football this week. Quote, that decision could set a trend for the rest of college football's landscape, and it could be a major one. Multiple sources within the Ivy League have told The Athletic's Bruce Feldman and Nicole Arbach, quote, that they expect Wednesday's announcement to be that the league is moving all fall sports, including football, to spring 2021, end quote. Forbes magazine previously reported, Stoke, there's a 98% chance Ivy League football will be moved to the spring. Quote, should the Ivy League follow through with this scenario, it would be notable for two reasons. It would be the first Division I conference to make such a sweeping change. There have been cancellations in college football's lower ranks, like Division II, a Morehouse College, and at least 3 Division III schools, but nothing quite like this. Also, what happens with the Ivy League could set the tone for the rest of college football. After all, it was the Ivy League that initially canceled its basketball conference tournament back on March 12th. After initial blowback for supposedly overreacting, other conferences quickly followed suit once the gravity of COVID-19 outbreak became clear, end quote. And boy, I remember like it was yesterday, you and I being on the air and it breaking live that the Ivy League was shutting down its conference tournament. And I remember in that moment, I was very frustrated with the Ivy League. I was like, what is the sense on waiting? You can ultimately cancel it, boy, when you have more information, but why would they take this away from these young boys and girls, young women, before we have all the evidence? And it turned out that the Ivy League was just that far ahead of the curve, right? And I think all of us should be watching closely what happens tomorrow with their decision on college football.
Yeah, just I don't know how you're going to have a college football season, what it looks like. And you see all these cases popping up, and will these colleges be going to class in school? Will it be remote learning? It's probably the best thing to do right now for those, for college football, is to move it to the spring and say we're going to put it on the back burner. We're going to put it to the spring because, man, you know, NFL is one thing, right? You got 32 teams. College is just a whole nother animal there, and you're dealing with they're not being paid. It's not their job. It's they're so different here. I think NFL football can try to do it, and we'll see. It might not work. It might not last. But I think they give it a lot better shot than college football will be able to do. So I think it's best for those young, when you're talking about football or any of the fall sports, is to put it on the back burner, revisit in the spring. Hopefully they can have some semblance of a season in the springtime. But to think that it's going to be able to happen here, I mean, just like we're early July here. I mean, camps and stuff are supposed to be starting to open up here pretty soon.
That's right.
I can't see college football happening.
Well, Harvard announced yesterday morning, I believe it was, that they're going all online learning for the year. All online remote learning. They are not, however, I don't know if you saw this, they are not, however, lowering their tuition. Stoke, the tuition will remain $59,000 for the two semesters. Kids are not going to be on campus. You think about the college experience and what comes with the college experience. You're on campus. You're playing intramurals. You're eating at the facility and you're hanging out with your friends. And I just think that's criminal for I'm just speaking for myself here. You're not going to lower the tuition one cent.
Right. I mean, you could lower it a little bit, but you're still going to get a degree from Harvard. So that's worth a lot of money. And I think that's the way they're looking at it is, you know, hey, We're a prestigious institution here, and in the end, if you stick it out, you know, you're going to get that diploma, and it's going to say Harvard on it. That's going to go a long way for you. So,
sure.
I think that's what they're basing it on. You can lower it a little bit because certainly you're not getting the same experience that you would.
Not even close.
But I think the way that they look at it is, hey, you know, you're going to get a great education, and if you stick it out, you're going to get that diploma that says Harvard on it that's going to pay for itself.
Well, this, and I got another quote for
you. What do
you
think about
you.
College football?
Well,
I mean, do you think there's any chance? I know SEC, Big Ten, Big 12, Pac-12. I mean, do you think they'll ACC? You think they'll be able to give it a go this fall?
I think they're going to try like hell. That's what I think. I think there's so much to be lost.
Of course they are, but do you think it's gonna happen? I know they're gonna try. Is it gonna happen, or will it be in the spring, or will it be just done until the fall of 2021? What's your prediction?
Man.
I'm not gonna hold you to it.
I know. Thank you for that. It'll be in the spring. It's too hot and heavy right now, man.
Yeah.
There's too much. Like, I'm seeing right now, as we're having this conversation, the San Francisco Giants shutting things down. It's breaking news. The San Francisco Giants suspending workouts at Oracle Park pending results of tests from the weekend.
The Nationals did the same thing a few days ago.
Yep.
Nationals did the same thing. They're supposed to get the test back in, 24 hours. It was like 3 days. They're like, we can't keep going like this. We got to shut it down. So they had to shut it down. Now you're saying the Giants just shut it down, San Francisco?
Yep. This is not going to go smoothly. It never was. It was never going to go smoothly. And I just hope, I go back to something you said the other day, or I think it was yesterday. Like, you're not questioning whether we're going to be there for the starting gun. You're questioning whether we're going to cross the finish line, which is really the point here. Because what a shame it would be if we get going here and there's just so much happening where we have to shut it all down again. I mean, what a blow to the sports morale. And I know that there's other important things at play, but what a blow to us as sports fans if we get all ratcheted up for this thing.
Yes.
And it gets shut down. And the prospect of that happening may be more likely than not. And that sucks.
Yeah, no, it does. It does. And just, 3-4 weeks ago, we were so optimistic and talking about, man, we might even have some fans in the stadium. And now it's like, oh, my goodness, I don't even know if we'll be able to even play.
Yeah.
And if we do, will we even be able to sustain it? Will we be able to play football in December and January? Will we even be able to get to that point? So it's I'm just, as the weeks have gone by, I've gotten more and more negative about it, the situation.
Yeah, I know, and it's hard not to if you're keeping your eyes and ears open. But I want to read this to you because tomorrow is a very, very, very important day, and I can't emphasize this enough. Quote, and this is coming from an anonymous Power 5 administrator, okay? In a Power 5 conference, this is an administrator within the athletic department. Quote, my suspicion is that the majority of presidents in the FBS are uncomfortable with the notion of playing football this fall, but for various reasons don't want to be the first to step out and say that. So more than anything else, that decision provides the cover they need, the decision of the Ivy League tomorrow. That decision provides the cover they need. I expect it'll be a big-time domino. So tomorrow afternoon, when the Ivy League votes, they have been, during this pandemic, a bit of a trendsetter. And it's going to be interesting to see what the vote is and then what the fallout is from the other conferences. So tomorrow's an important day, and we're going to keep our fingers on the pulse of this.
Nice.
Vote. All right. Now, we don't know if they're going to cross the finish line, Stoke, but baseball is planning on coming back. The Rocky schedule released yesterday. I'm holding in my hands the details that you need to know, and it's coming up next. Who knows what's in store? We don't know the future, but on a day like today, I am choosing to be optimistic. My spectrum of optimism to pessimism changes like the weather in Colorado. It's just depending on the day. But I was pretty excited yesterday when these schedules started to come out for Major League Baseball. Stoke, the Rockies will start the 60-game 2020 season on the road against the Texas Rangers in 2 weeks. How about that?
2 weeks.
Friday, July 24th, just about 2 weeks. Friday, July 24th at the brand new Globe Life Field in Arlington, Texas.
Okay. Awesome.
So that's how we get started, man.
I love it. Now, will that be the first game? You said brand new.
It'll be the first game at that new facility.
Yeah, at that new stadium.
Yep.
Because I went to a Cowboys game last year, and that stadium was just being finished up. It's right next to the Cowboys stadium. Really, really cool. Okay. First one there. Rockies get to open it up.
Yeah, so that'll be like awesome. A trivia question in 15 years for the folks down there. The Rockies will play all their games against teams from the NL West. So 40 of the 60 games are going to be played against NL West opponents. So two-thirds. The other 20 are going to be against the American League West. So 60 total games, 40 against NL West teams, the other 20 against the AL West. The team's home opener, all right, so the first time that the Rockies will be back at Coors Field will be Friday, July 31st against the Padres. That game will be nationally televised on ESPN. So pretty cool. All 60 of the games will be broadcast on AT&T Sportsnet, so no days off. And
awesome.
So that's great. So you're not going to miss one game, because you know that happens when it's 162. Sometimes they pack up their stuff on the last day of a road trip or something like that, and we don't get to see the games, unfortunately. That will not be the case during this pandemic. The Rockies, in their statement that they put out, They hope to allow a limited number of fans to attend 2020 home games at Coors Field. And to that end, they said, this is from the team statement, and to that end, we have been working with city and state health officials as well as Major League Baseball to finalize a plan that adheres to strict health protocols and ensures fan safety, end quote. Are you surprised that the Rockies are preparing to allow a limited number of folks into Coors Field?
No, I think you got to prepare for that. You would be not doing your job if you didn't prepare to have something like that happen. Now, obviously, there's no chance you're going to be able to have full stadiums, but you ought to prepare. Like, hey, we might be able to have some fans in here. I think that's smart. That's smart, and they should be doing that. Do I think it will happen? I mean, how many fans are we talking about? Are we talking about, 5,000? Are we talking about 500 or 50?
Right. Don't know.
What would that number be? Obviously, if it's, it's open air, it's outdoor, why couldn't you have, with the right protocols in place, with social distancing, like 1,000 or 2,000 people? Why couldn't you do that?
Yeah, I think you could. I think you pull that off fairly safely. Coors Field is a huge place.
Yes.
So, yeah.
I got dibs on the rooftop.
Hey, you're going to have to pry it from my hands. I mean, I just
called dibs on it.
We're going to have to find a way to get up there together because I got to be at Coors Field. I am. If they have strict protocols in place, I trust that. I would absolutely love to see baseball up close. I would absolutely love that.
Oh, I would go in a heartbeat. I mean, look, it's outdoors. I would have my mask on. Obviously, you would have to probably have those kind of things. And man, I mean, it's social distancing and mask. Hey,
yep.
I'm good.
You pull it
I'm
off. Yep.
Yeah,
yep.
Absolutely.
I am with you.
Hopefully we get there, and hopefully they can have fans. And hopefully they do have a full 60-game baseball season. But I'm getting excited now. We got a little over 2 weeks. First
yep.
game in, is it Arlington?
Yep, Arlington.
The Rangers.
Right. Yep, playing the Rangers. So and here's awesome. here's a couple more important details. The Rockies have got to get off to a good start, and they're going to have to do right. it away from Coors Field. Because the first okay. five games of the season are away, at Texas and at Oakland. All right? They also, and this is maybe even more noteworthy, they close the season away from Coors Field. 7 consecutive games on the road against San Francisco and Arizona. All right? So if the Rockies are in it down the stretch, they have got to win games to close out the season away from the friendly confines of Coors Field.
Okay. And I'm okay with that. I'm okay with starting on the road. Hopefully, the other team's rusty also, and then get in a little rhythm and then come back home and play the bulk of your games in the middle of that season back home, and then finish up with hopefully you're playing good ball and you go on the road. It don't matter where you're playing at that time. You see the playoffs, and you make a nice run to get into the playoffs. So I don't mind it. I don't mind the way that's set up for them. But you said they are playing 40 other games against the NL West?
Yep.
And 20 other games against the AL West?
Yep.
Okay.
So it's, look, and by the way, the Rockies have 3 separate series against the Dodgers. The unfortunate part is that they're going to be playing more away than they are home. The road series against the Dodgers, you're talking about August 21st, 22nd, 23rd. You're talking about September 4th, 5th, and 6th, and just 3 games at home during later in September against the Dodgers. It's not good because the Dodgers have been lately to the Rockies, or really throughout their franchise's history, the Dodgers have owned the Rockies, but especially here of late. The Dodgers were 15-4 last year against the Rockies, and that record is significantly worse when they went to L.A. I mean, they just got pounded last year by the Dodgers. And I know last year was last year, but this is worth mentioning. We talk about strength of schedule. I know I have to preface it. Doesn't matter. It's a new year, players moving, and all that stuff. But based on last year's records, the Rockies have the 5th hardest strength of schedule in the whole league, and the Dodgers have the 5th easiest. So it's not going to come easy. I mean, the Rockies have the odds stacked against them. There's so many question marks about the pitching and the bullpen. They're coming off maybe the most disappointing year in terms of expectations mixed with results, maybe in franchise history. So,
maybe so.
What's that?
I said maybe so.
Yeah.
I kind of like this start. You got the 5 games on the road to start it, right? You got the Rangers for 3, and then you got the Oakland Athletics for 2. Am I looking at the
yep.
the right?
Yep.
Okay, perfect. So 5 on the road, then you come back home. You got the Padres and the Giants and the Mariners. You got the Mariners on the road. But look, I mean, it's not like we open up with 3 against the Dodgers, then we got 4 against Houston, then we got So I look at it as something that hopefully the Rockies can get on a little bit of a roll here and get started off fast here. The one thing that does stick out to me. looking at the schedule, is if there are fans, Zach, you'll get to boo.
You'll get to boo. That's the game I want to go to.
The Houston Astros are coming to town on the 19th, August 19th and 20th.
Man.
So, Zach, if you could be there, you'll get to boo. That's all you want to do. For those who don't know,
I don't boo. I don't.
How do you not boo, man? What do you mean?
I don't care
you
if other people boo. I just don't boo. I've booed one guy in my life. And that was Chad Ochocinco when he was insulting Buffalo when he went there with the Patriots. It's the only guy I've ever booed.
So that's why you got blocked.
He wouldn't know that.
That's why you got blocked. You said you never said anything bad about him.
Well, I can't remember ever saying anything bad about
him. You said you booed him.
I was at the game. I booed him.
Oh, you were at the game? Oh, yeah. You booed him at the game?
Yeah. I was at the game.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, no, but you know.
Booed him. That's the only guy you've ever booed.
You know what? Maybe I did tweet something during that time period years ago.
And you kept on saying you didn't.
No, look, if it was that inflammatory, I would have whatever.
Go back and check. We'll look back at that time. I bet you did say something bad about him.
The only way that people go that far deep in your Twitter history is if you get drafted.
That's right.
And then they go real deep. They go real deep.
Oh, all right. Man. Boo that man.
Boo that man. And if I don't get in, I'll drive to Coors Field and boo from the outside.
That's right.
Just on principle.
Right. You
cheaters.
Need to boo them.
And by the way, last detail here, the defending World Series champion Washington Nationals will host the New York Yankees in the first game of the 2020 Major League Baseball season. That'll be on July 23rd. It's a doubleheader. It's followed by a common opponent for the Rockies, the Giants, traveling to L.A. to play the Dodgers. So there's your kickoff to the Major League Baseball season.
Love it.
Yankees, Nationals, Giants, Dodgers. Here we go. All right. Stoke. Chris Harris Jr. He joined Colin Cowherd last week and had some interesting comments about Drew Lock. Maybe some shade? Details next. Chris Harris Jr. was on with the driver of the national media Broncos bandwagon, Colin Cowherd. And he offered up some interesting thoughts about Drew Lock when he was asked about Lock's last five games of the 2019 season.
Drew Lock fascinates me. He's got an arm. He's athletic. He didn't play a ton, but you more than anybody have practiced against him and seen him. Yeah. What are Drew Lock's strengths? And if he has some weaknesses now, what are they? Give me the book on him. Take your time on this.
Man, I can't do that, man. That's the end of me now. So. But Drew, man, he has a lot of confidence. I think that's something that guys like. We got to play the last five games with him. I don't think the schedule was up to par, really, to really get a real test. But he played solid in those games. He definitely has a lot of – he can make all the throws, I think. I think his confidence is what really really ignites those players on offense. So for playing against him, that's going to be something that we'll try to take away.
Did you hear that in there about the opponents?
I did. I caught that. I caught that little jab, quick jab.
Just touched him.
Let you feel a little bit.
Oh, speaking of jabs, Jorge Masvidal this weekend. I'm gonna rant on that in just a little bit later.
Oh, okay. I want to hear.
Yeah, UFC. Oh my goodness. We'll get into it. But,
okay.
But that little jab.
He was a late replacement.
He was, and this dude is a bad boy. Bad boy. Okay. But the comment from Chris Harris Jr., like, the opponents weren't really up to par.
Right.
Is there something to that?
Let's go through the opponents. Okay. What do we have? Do we have the Chargers?
We have the Chargers, yep.
Okay, Chris, that's your team you're on. So you're taking a little shot at your team. They were very good last year.
Good point.
We had the Texans.
Yep.
They were a pretty darn good football team last year.
Yeah,
they were, you know, second round of the playoffs and had the Chiefs on the ropes.
They were 8-5 when the Broncos played them in week 14.
And it was at their place.
It was.
So it was on the road. Had the Lions. They stunk. Okay, mm-hmm. He's right about the Lions.
They were 3-11-1 at the time.
The Raiders. The Raiders were meh. You know, they started off. They started off good. Then they folded down the stretch. Right. Typical Raiders season.
They were 7-8 when they played.
Right. So Raiders, yeah, okay, I'll give you that. They weren't that good. And the last one was who's that? Kansas City.
Kansas City in the snowstorm.
Right, and so they were a really good team, obviously, and they, you know, showed us they were a really good team that day. So, look, I mean, I think that's fair. I mean, it wasn't the toughest five-game stretch, but I don't think, you know, the Chargers weren't very good last year. So you look at the Chargers, you look at the Lions, you look at the Raiders. I say, okay, three of the five weren't very good last year. The other two, the Chiefs and the Texans, those were good football teams, right?
They were.
So it wasn't the easiest five-game stretch, but certainly it wasn't the hardest. I put it, you know, if you had to say, was it hard or was it easy, which side am I leaning to? I'd probably lean more towards the easier side.
Okay. There was two teams with winning records. That was Houston and Kansas City. They lost to Kansas City. They beat Houston. The other three teams were losers last year. And gosh, they barely beat the Raiders.
That's NFL football, though.
No, it
doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter how you do it.
And then you can say that about the teams too. Even though they're losing football teams, right, like they're on scholarship too, as the old saying goes. Like that was five NFL football teams, and Drew went 4-1. But when you do peel back the onion a little bit, you know, it's the Lions, they stunk. The Raiders, okay, a couple games under 500. Chargers were 4-12. You know, but all you can do is play who's in front of you.
Try to win the game. And he was able to do that. And so, look, if you want to, you know, nitpick about it and just say, oh, man, that wasn't the toughest stretch of the season, that's fine. I mean, that's fair. Fair to say.
Sure.
Those five games weren't, you know, the hardest part of the season. But certainly, you know, you had a couple in there and you had the Texans. We can't just overlook the Houston Texans like, you know, they weren't a good football team last year. They were a good football team. You know, they won a playoff game and went on the road and you know, Bill O'Brien tried that great fake punt and, you know, right, it just went downhill after that. But they had the Chiefs on the ropes, and obviously, I mean, everybody knows how good Deshaun Watson is. Our defense played great, and Drew Lock played great. So, look, hey, I mean, like I said, I think it would be classified more on the easier side, but it is what it is. I mean, it just, you play who you play.
Yeah.
You're going to have stretches this year where we look back and we'll say, oh, those were easy games. Well, hopefully you win them. Hopefully you win those games. And that's what you got to do in the NFL, man, is take care of business when you're supposed to take care of business. You saw the Houston Texans. They thought the Broncos were going to be an easy win. Well, what happened? They got their butts whipped.
Yeah.
So you take care of business against teams that you're supposed to take care of business against, and that's what Drew did. So I think you got to give him credit for that. We can't look at it and just, you know, say, oh, well, they played a bad five teams, and that was easy. And no, you can't do that.
Real quick, by the way, I agree with you. No, you can't do that. Usain Bolt had a daughter.
Oh.
He named her Olympia Lightning Bolt. How about that?
Love it. Just love it.
Olympia
Lightning
Bolt.
Just love it. Love it. All-timer.
Even Elon Musk is like, damn, that's creative. Put an equation for his kid's name. Are you kidding me?
All right. Oh, my goodness. What is wrong with Elon Musk?
I don't know. Patrick.
Whole lot of money.
Yeah, oh, yeah. You bet your bottom dollar. Patrick Saunders did a one-on-one sit-down with Nolan Arenado. What were some of the biggest takeaways, and what was the mood when he answered the question about Jeff Breidich? We'll talk to Patrick Saunders next. Patrick Saunders, great friend of this show that's been joining us periodically for years now. He joins us live. And Patrick, you had a sit down with Nolan Arenado just a couple days ago. It was in the Post. Very well done. I guess I'll just leave the floor to you in my first question here. The biggest takeaway from your conversation with Nolan was what?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think the biggest takeaway was that he has really, he is taking the pandemic very, very seriously. However, his desire, aching desire, if you will, to get out and play baseball kind of floored me. I mean, he is so excited in one fashion or another to get out there and play baseball. Not that that was unexpected, but for him to be that hard charging about that, that's what stuck with me.
Patrick, was there any talk? Did you ask him about the comments that he made about feeling disrespected, and how is his and the organization? How are they doing right now? Are they on the same page? Any questions about that at all? I didn't get a chance to see.
Yeah, there was a question about that. He basically sidestepped it, saying, "Listen, now's not the time to rehash that. All I'm concentrating on is this quick 60-game season. That's for down the road." It was clear that that was not a topic that he wanted to dwell on right as baseball was starting to return.
But, and Patrick, just to follow up on that, like, and I read the quotes to you. I read your interview. It was really well done. But when he sidestepped it by sidestepping it and not addressing it and saying, "Hey, yo, we're going to focus on, you know, trying to win games," it is indirectly not like adding fuel to a fire, because I'm not saying there's a fire, but there is a narrative between the two. And when you're unwilling to even go there, it speaks to that narrative, does it not?
Yeah, a little bit. I think the morning show asked me yesterday, day before, I can't remember when I spoke to Slareth and Evans, but they asked me something similar. And my response would essentially be that, you know, there's certainly no warm and fuzzies between Nolan and Jeff Wright as the GM, but there's certainly not a hot war on right now. I didn't take it that Nolan was really sidestepping it so much as it is so out of the picture right now that, you know, the trade deadline, I don't think it's going to factor into Nolan. So I don't really see it as a sidestepping so much as Nolan just thinking it's totally out of my window right now. It's not on my mind. That's how I took it.
Patrick, talk about the Ian Desmond situation. I think that the Rockies are kind of happy that he's not coming for the 60 games. They get to save the $5.5 million. Am I wrong? Do you agree? Do you disagree? What do you think their feelings are on Ian Desmond not playing the 60 games?
Well, I have two points of view on it. One, reading what I thought was a very eloquent Instagram post by Ian about a variety of things, not only why he was opting out of the season. I think standing alone on its own, it was a very powerful thing to write, and I applauded him for it. Now, the other side of the equation, is the team better for not having Ian Desmond, not having to pay him $5.5 million this year? Let's be honest. I would say probably yes. Yeah. He certainly not lived up to his 5-year, $70 million contract. I'm not saying he's necessarily a liability, but he's certainly nothing that's going to change the, in my opinion, the essence of the short season. So, you know, not having Ian Desmond on this roster, is it going to adversely hurt the Rockies? No. Is it going to help them if he's not playing? Not necessarily, but the possibility is certainly there if someone else steps up and comes through. And I'm thinking of Ronel Tapia. Right. It opens the door for him. It opens the door for Sam Hilliard.
Yep.
If some of the young guys can come through with some youth energy and can get hot, then you're right. It's a bonus for this team.
And Patrick, just real quick, I mean, he has had like long stretches where he has been a major liability over the past couple of years. I mean, he's had a historic bad stretch in terms of the history of baseball. I mean, he's had some awful stretches where he has been a huge liability. Now, he's able to fight his way out of it, but I'm with you. I just think in the shortened season, hey, we can save $5.5 million and we can see some other players and not have to feel like we have to force him to play because of the salary we're paying him. I think probably privately they're not upset at all.
Well, that definitely could be that, and this is total speculation on my part. I have not talked to Ian about this, so I don't know, but let me just say this. It would not shock me if Ian doesn't play again, ever.
Really?
I'm just saying. Well, I mean, he's 35.
Yeah.
And he's made a lot of money. He has, you know, I think it'll be his fifth kid is on the way. He has certainly has a lot of other non MLB interests. He'll been away from the game for another year, and he keeps himself in tremendous shape. And yes, the Rockies, you know, owe him money next year. Now, I'm just speculating, but I'm just saying, in this crazy world we're living in, there's no guarantees that Ian Desmond ever plays with the Rockies again.
Yeah, no, that's worth pointing out. And Patrick Saunders of the Denver Post, our Rockies insider, joining us here on the Fireball Hotline. Patrick, yesterday the schedule came out. What were some of the signature points that you took away?
Well, I think number one, I think in the early going, it's advantageous to the Rockies because they have a smattering of games off in the early going. And I think that's going to be important because pitchers are not going to be fully stretched out, and that gives the Rockies more flexibility. So I think that's terrific for this team because I think one of their weaknesses is going to be lack of pitching depth, and they're going to need it. So that gives them a break in the early going. August is going to be brutal. It's going to be hot. There's going to be travel. I think they have one day off in the entire month.
Wow.
That really, really stuck with me. And then something that's kind of tied to the schedule, and it's a story I'm working on right now, is I think Tony Walters and Trevor Story both mentioned this to me. They said, you know, we're being very, very persnickety, if that's a good word, or very strict about our health protocols in the time of the coronavirus, because their thinking is, you know what, it could be that the team that stays the healthiest and returns in terms of this virus just might be have the best chance to win. And, you know, if you look at it from that perspective, say one team starts slacking off on protocols and they lose a couple of players during the course of the year because they weren't careful. And let's say the Rockies, you know, are over the top in terms of, you know, masks and social distancing and stuff. You know, who knows? Maybe that could be a factor in this 60-game schedule, too. So there are so many things going on, so many unknowns, but you know, the schedule, as I see it, I'm certainly not the toughest in MLB, but that August stretch is going to be, that's going to be the truth teller for sure.
Yeah, I like that, Patrick. You know, it might come down to just what team could stay away from the virus and stay as healthy as possible. So, obviously, you know, everybody's going to be trying to do that, and hopefully the Rockies can do it. And if they do, you know, why not the Rockies to make a great run here? Give me a player or two that you're really looking forward to watching this year. You know, besides maybe Nolan and Trevor and Charlie, like, is there a guy or two, you know, that you're really excited that you think might have a breakout 60-game season?
Oh, yeah, definitely David Dahl. I mean, love for it. Sure. David Dahl stays healthy. I mean, guys, he was an all-star last year, kind of a fringe all-star until he got hurt again. He's in incredible shape. He's grown so much confidence. He's a power hitter. If David Dahl gets hot for 2 weeks, 20 days, he can carry a team on his shoulders. He is that good a hitter, in my opinion. I think David Dahl is really worth keeping an eye on. I think Sam Hilliard, even though he strikes out too much, you could see him as a DH once in a while. He's got some pop in his bat. So I think he's interesting. Pitching-wise, a couple of guys I'm really interested to see. I'm curious to see if Antonio Sensatella, who basically is the number four starter right now, can take that next step. He seems primed to. If he can, that's a huge bonus for the Rockies. And then in the bullpen, I think Carlos Estevez is about to come into his own. And if he and Scott Olberg and Jairo Diaz can pitch well in that bullpen, you know, it's not going to matter quite so much how the veterans, Wade Davis, Brian Shaw, and Jake McGee do. They're going to need them all. But I think Carlos Estevez is primed to be a real, real strong late-game reliever.
In terms of the starting pitching, Patrick, and Patrick Saunders of the Denver Post joining us here live, in terms of the starting pitching, is the biggest question mark on top of Kyle Freeland, or is there someone else that sticks out to you that you say, man, if this guy is not pitching well, then the Rockies aren't going to have much hope?
I think that's no question about it. Kyle Freeland is, in terms of the starting rotation, is the key. Because he was so good in 2018. He was so bad last year. I don't think he'll match 2018 again. It'd be great if he did. I'd love to see it. But he can't be what he was last year. Everything I see points to the fact he's going to rebound, but you're exactly right. There is more pressure, I think, on Kyle Freeland than any other Rocky going into this 60-game season.
Well, it's not really a mystery. If you look at the 2018 Rockies and just how good they were, and just how good Kyle Freeland was, he took the monster step back year over year, and so did the Rockies. I mean, so it's in some ways, and not like it's all on Kyle, he's pitching every 4 or 5 days, but in some ways the Rockies' success year over year mimics or reflects Kyle Freeland's successes or his struggles.
You're exactly right. And like I said, he doesn't have to finish fourth in the Cy Young voting. He doesn't have to win, 17 games? Obviously, he's not going to win 17 games, but you know what I'm saying. He doesn't have to have a 2.85 ERA or whatever. I think that's beyond expectations. But he's got to be able to go eventually 6-7 innings, give him quality innings, win more than he loses, put the team in a position to win. Because last year, you know, almost every time out of the gate when Kyle was on the mound, the Rockies didn't have much of a chance to win. So they can't afford that. They need Kyle Freeland to rebound. I think he will, too. I'm confident. I think he's dedicated enough. He's certainly smart enough. And I think he's got good enough stuff that he can turn it around.
Columns and videos delivered to your inbox every morning. Register for the free Denver Sports Daily at 1043thefan.com.